Good afternoon, members of the court. My name is Edward Fornius, and I represent the appellant, Marion Roche, in this case. She was the plaintiff below. Before I get started, may it please the court, I'd like to give a brief overview of what happened. This case involved a motor vehicle accident from October of 2007. Ms. Roche was rear-ended by Constance Rogers, who has since expired, and Mr. Charney, the defendant below, is the administrator of that estate. Following the accident site, Ms. Roche was taken to the emergency room. She followed up with Dr. Demetrius Zerifos, who in turn referred her for physical therapy and for an orthopedic consultation with Dr. Bruce Katz, a board-certified orthopedic surgeon. Dr. Katz was identified as Ms. Roche's trial expert below, and it's the subject of his expert report that is at issue here today. Simply put, Ms. Roche has not had the ability to have her day in court and for her case to be decided on her merits because summary judgment was granted in favor of the defendant. It was the contention below from Mr. Charney that Dr. Katz's expert report did not articulate anything resembling a causation opinion.
Let me stop you right there.
Sure.
I assume that when that motion was filed, you were alerted to at least the claim being made by the other side that this report was insufficient to provide a basis for causation.
Yes.
And when the trial court agreed with that and you asked for one day to get an affidavit in, that suggests to me at least that in one day after that motion had been filed, you could have submitted an affidavit or asked to submit an affidavit and demonstrate to the court that, yes, you know, you can solve this problem very rapidly because my expert is testifying that this is the cause of the injury. Why didn't you do that?
It was my hope. It was my hope that if I was given an additional day, I would be able to secure a report from Dr. Katz. It's been my position and the partners in my firm that we believe the report, having seen countless reports from Dr. Katz and other members of his practice, that it was in fact sufficient. Now it's made the doctor.
Wait a minute, maybe I'm missing something. I'm not sure Justice Berger's question goes to what you could have done within 24 hours after summary judgment was granted, but what you could have done within 24 hours after being put on notice that the other side is going to raise the issue of an inarticulate statement, if one at all, about causation in Dr. Katz's report. Maybe I misinterpreted the question.
In addition, since you told the court that you could get such an affidavit in 24 hours when you asked for the 24-hour continuance, that means that you could have gotten that affidavit a day after this motion was filed. You made it sound as if this is a 1-2-3, I'll clear this up, I'll get an affidavit from the expert that'll take care of any concerns about what his opinion is, and yet you didn't do that and you went through motion practice instead. Why didn't you go to your expert right then when the motion was filed?
I did not go to him as soon as the motion was filed because I believe that what we had submitted, the two expert reports, was sufficient, and I was confident standing on the reports that had been submitted.
Where in Dr. Katz's letter of October 30, which I think is the primary document, do we find the opinion as to causation?
I will concede that you will not see words like causally related, secondary to, but I believe
I'm not looking for magic words. I'm looking for the concept that the accident somehow or other is linked to the injury.
I would
and
submit
other than just she tells me she had an accident and then we move on.
I would submit that it's important for any examining physician to take a history as to why you're here. He notes that she was referred to him from Dr. Zerifos, who was treating her from the car accident. In looking to see what he's treating her for, he says that she indicated that she was involved in a motor vehicle accident, describes what happened, describes some of the treatment, and describes the symptoms that she suffered from that accident. His records, which were attached, indicate that she denied a pre-accident history, and again gave a history of being seen there at the request of Dr. Zarifos and because of a motor vehicle accident. There's no other cause or potential cause for her symptoms articulated anywhere in his records or in the report. And I would submit that while Dr. Katz may have a difficult time under cross-examination, he believed that he had given an opinion. And I say that because his second report, in which he was asked to review some records, it was a different issue that he was asked to address, and it was a late report of symptoms. But his second report says nothing has changed any of the opinions I made in my first report. So I would submit that Dr. Katz believed he had given an opinion as to causation.
When did you know that the defendants had an expert who would testify that her symptoms were only partially caused by the October 2007 accident?
My recollection is shortly before the mediation.
That would have been well before the summary judgment motion.
It would have been a month or two. It was my recollection before summary judgment, but well after my deadline.
Wouldn't that put you on notice to review causation with your own expert?
I believe that it does, and once I was aware of Dr. Gehr's opinion, I don't think I was always under the mindset that Dr. Katz was very clear as to why he was treating her, so much that shortly after the case was filed, I sent a letter to defense counsel saying Dr. Katz relates this.
Tell us how the Superior Court judge erred by granting summary judgment.
As I believe that the Superior Court did not look to see whether the defendant was on notice that Dr. Katz was likely to testify or would testify that the surgery was related to the car accident. I think that Rule 26, which sets forth that there has to be entire fairness in the process, says that we have to disclose our treating expert's opinions to the other side so that they have the opportunity to rebut that opinion. And I can only see that the policy underlying Rule 26 would be to put the other side on notice of what your expert is likely to say. And I would submit that if a layperson read that report, they would say, well, she was there for a car accident, and that's what Dr. Katz was writing about. So viewing that report, both reports, in the light most favorable to Ms. Roche in this case, I believe the Superior Court erred in granting summary judgment on that basis because Dr. Katz's report could be read to put, and should have been read to put, the defendant on notice that he was going to testify about causation.
Okay. Do you see any difference between putting a defendant on notice for the possibility of filing an answer, in other words, going beyond the motion to dismiss stage, with the burden on a party who has the obligation to go forward with the evidence for summary judgment purposes to present facts that create a genuine issue of material fact?
And yes.
What is the genuine issue of material fact that you've created here?
Whether or not the surgery and the treatment Dr. Katz provided was related to the car accident.
And that then relates back to your view that standing alone, his two letters sufficiently introduce into a summary judgment argument a material fact from his perspective that the automobile accident caused the symptoms for which he's treating her.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, I also would like to address this court's decision in the Drake case, which I believe is somewhat similarly situated. In that case, there was an expert report that was submitted late, and albeit that's not the case here, but this court reversed the Superior Court's grant of summary judgment, finding that dismissal was the ultimate sanction because of essentially the malfeasance, or if that's too strong a word, the bad behavior of the attorneys, and the plaintiff was deprived of her day in court in that case. And I would submit that this case is similarly situated, though the Superior Court did not agree, because at the end of the day, we're left with the same thing. We're left with the plaintiff, in this case, who has submitted two expert reports, submitted them early, and wasn't put on notice of any problem with them until at the earliest, Dr. Gehr's report was submitted, and at the very latest, until the mediation when this issue was first raised. So I would submit that...
Let me ask you another question. The first thing that came to my mind in terms of this situation was the plaintiff is surprised but finds out that the other side is questioning whether this report is an adequate statement of causation. So in my mind, the next thing you would do is submit your affidavit that would clarify that. Fine. You didn't because you thought the report was sufficient. You then get to summary judgment. The court rules against you, so you ask for a 24-hour continuance in order to submit an affidavit. The court did not grant that, but have you attempted to supplement the record at any point to show what the doctor would have said in that affidavit?
I did secure an additional report from Dr. Katz clarifying what I would have asked for, but it was after the fact, and I didn't think it was appropriate or fair to submit it into this record.
No, I'm talking about submitting it to the trial court.
No, I did not.
Can you, this is not intended to suggest this case dispositive in any way, but is it correct that this summary judgment motion was heard a week before the trial date?
It was close. In my recollection, it was close.
Is that customary to have a motion for summary judgment heard when there's a trial date fixed a week later?
My recollection was that the motion itself was filed on the last possible day. And with respect to it being customary, all I can say is that it generally varies in my experience from judge to judge.
Filed the last possible day in relation to an existing scheduling order?
Correct. The motion for summary judgment. There was a deadline for dispositive motions.
Okay, and how long was that deadline before the trial date?
I will say less than a month. My recollection was it was a couple weeks away. And lastly, with respect to that issue about my request for a continuance, I would submit that there was no prejudice to the defendant in this case, who should have been, in my opinion, well aware that that's what I intended to elicit from Dr. Katz, i.e. a causation opinion. Their expert had already opined about it. I don't submit, while it would be equitable to give Dr. Gehr an opportunity to respond to the new report, I think we could have worked around it, especially in a case like this where neither party missed the deadline. Everything was done early. Nobody even asked for a continuance. This was a case that moved along, as all cases should, but do not, in my opinion. The only manifest injustice that came, plaintiff would submit, would be to Ms. Roche, who is not going to be able to have her day in court throughout. And unless your honors have any additional questions, I would reserve the remainder of my time for.
That's fine. Thank you.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Dana Monzo. May it please the Court. My name is Dana Monzo, and I represent the appellee, Stanley Charney, as the administrator of the estate of Constance Rogers. And before I begin my presentation, I'd like to address a few points that my colleague has raised in his argument. First, he stated in his oral argument that he had hoped to secure a statement from Dr. Katz in discussing his request for a continuance or 24-hour extension to get a report during the oral argument at our summary judgment hearing. And that isn't even, at that point, so close to trial a week before, hope to get a report is not something that I think would be reasonable for a court to consider, and I think that points against manifest injustice to the plaintiffs.
You heard me ask your colleague when he was first on notice that causation was an issue, or that there may have been a deficiency of some kind in Dr. Katz's report. What's your recollection of when you put him on notice that there was a problem?
Well, specifically, Your Honor, I never directly put plaintiffs on notice of that particular issue until I filed a motion for summary judgment. However, it is the plaintiff's burden of proof, and I didn't want to tip my hand entirely as to some strategy for our case, and part of it was that I thought they had a very big problems with their causation report. But as early as January of 2010, I contacted plaintiff's attorney with respect to the report that he had just submitted to me, or we had a telephone conversation. I shouldn't say I contacted him. I forget how it transpired. But either way, I brought up some points about prior medical history of back problems that weren't addressed by Katz, and I also suggested to him that I thought there were some problems with his report, and I didn't say what. Then we, you know, move forward a year in the litigation. We're at our mediation, and that is an issue that we bring up as a reason why, you know, we're not trying.
Okay, when was the mediation in relation to the request for a 24-hour?
I want to say it was one or 2 months before. I think it was maybe April of 2011, but my colleague may have a better recollection of that.
All right, well, I'll let him answer that one if he wants to when he comes back. And why was the summary judgment motion heard just a week before trial?
Your Honor, we filed it in accordance with the scheduling order, which was prepared by Judge Tolliver, and we agreed to the dates. We filed it on the last day, and part of that was trying to save my client some money. We were hoping to try and resolve this matter, and when we determined that we were not going to be able to come to some kind of an agreement between the plaintiffs and the defendants as to an amicable resolution, my client said, well, then let's go ahead and file this. And so I was trying to save them some money. We were trying to avoid burdening the court with another motion if we could resolve the matter between us, and we were not able to. And so at that point, I filed the motion, and I filed it in accordance with the time frame that the judge selected.
I understand it's consistent with the scheduling order. It just seems to me, albeit my experience is somewhat dated, that's dangerous to have a motion for summary judgment just a week before a trial date.
I believe the deadline was June 13th. The trial was to commence July 5th, and then we ended up having the oral argument on the 27th, which was when the court selected.
Has that become customary? Because it strikes me it takes a 4 days out of the trial schedule for that judge, and the time's just lost. You can't supplement it with another trial date.
I appreciate that. I think it depends on the kind of case. I practice a lot in medical malpractice cases, and we have summary judgment deadlines significantly before the trial dates because a lot of these cases have major issues that need to be examined and the court needs time. I think in the more routine auto cases, the courts may build in a little less time. I don't practice extensively in the area of auto litigation. This is one of the few cases that I have, so I can't speak on what the regular practice is for Superior Court on that issue.
Okay. You heard your colleague address the Draca case.
Yes.
What's your position on its applicability here?
I don't think it's applicable at all. The Draca case addresses a discovery sanction for an individual who produced an expert report 4 months after the expert deadline, and the Superior Court, as a punishment for failure to comply with the scheduling order, precluded the expert from testifying and precluded the report. In this case, we had expert reports submitted timely, and there was an actual adjudication on the merits of the case. The plaintiffs had the burden of proof. They submitted an expert report. The expert report, under the law in this jurisdiction, the defendant is entitled to rely upon that report as the totality of the plaintiff's presentation. The Superior Court evaluated the report and found that it was lacking a causation opinion, and so a decision was made as a matter of law that the report did not satisfy a prima facie case of negligence, and the causation was not established, and that the plaintiff's case was dismissed. It was not a sanction for failure to comply with the discovery order. It was an adjudication on the merits of a report that did not satisfy an element of negligence. And so
okay. Let's forget about sanctions, if you will, and talk about 1 day. And whether it was an abuse of discretion if and I'm just playing this out. I'm not necessarily postulating that this is correct, but you have medical records that you've had for quite some time, and you know that plaintiff is planning on relying on Dr. Katz to say that these injuries were the result of the accident. It's not as if you didn't realize that's what they were trying to do. You made a determination, which the court agreed with, that what had been submitted at that point was insufficient. But clearly you knew that that's where plaintiff was coming from. They were going to put on Dr. Katz, and Dr. Katz was going to testify that the accident caused her injuries. But you look at the report, you say to yourself, this isn't good enough. I'm filing a motion for summary judgment. Court grants the motion for summary judgment. And if I understand the facts correct, plaintiff's counsel says, give me 24 hours, Judge, and I'll have an affidavit that will clearly state that it is my opinion that these injuries are the result of this accident. Why was it not an abuse of discretion to deny that motion in light of the fact that that additional affidavit should not have generated any additional discovery or anything else, because you already knew that that's what his position was? You still got your trial date. Nothing changes except for the fact that now you have a trial.
I appreciate the question. I think that Judge Tolliver used conscience and reason in making his determination. First, Dr. Katz was Ms. Roach's treating physician, and generally a treating physician makes their best effort to put everything in the medical records. Although not everything, I represent a lot of doctors, and I can tell you that not everything that they remember is always in the records. And because he was a treating physician rather than an IME doctor, it was quite possible that the supplemental report may have had some information in it that was not contained within the medical records, is my first point. Second, my expert was on vacation and was not contactable the week before trial. There was no causation opinion in those first two reports. And while I can presume the plaintiffs may have intended to try and elicit some sort of causation opinion from Dr. Katz, I honestly don't know what it was. There was no information in either of those reports that suggests to the defense what a causation opinion would be. And in fact, my own expert, who did address the causation slightly, wasn't able to render an opinion with respect to the back. So I don't know how Dr. Katz would be able to do so, and if he would, what the basis of that opinion would be. And so I do think that there would have been prejudice a week before trial to have to deal with a new report from a treating physician without the benefit of having my expert be able to look at it, comment it on, possibly have some new issues thrown into the case that weren't previously there.
And the unavailability of your expert, was that something known to Judge Tolliver?
I brought that up at the oral argument, which is submitted in the opening, the appendix of the appellant's brief. I brought that up, that we thought that it was, that my expert was not contactable. Judge Tolliver considered that I might even need to get a new expert depending on what this report said, which is another possibility. Discussed that the prejudice would be a week before trial to have a new report, which may change the defense of the case altogether, was this insurmountable obstacle in advance of a week before trial. And on top of all those points, as early as mediation, I could say with confidence that the plaintiffs were aware that there was a problem with their report and nothing was done. And then when I filed the motion...
How long was the mediation? Well, let me restate that. How much time elapsed between the mediation and the oral argument on summary judgment?
I want to say approximately one or two. I want to say it was 2 months. I think the mediation was in April, but I may be wrong on that. It was at least a month. And then, worst case scenario, when I filed my motion, Ms. Roach did not file a supplemental report saying, if given leave of court, we will clarify this issue with this attached Exhibit A clarification report from Dr. Katz, and that wasn't done. And I don't know if Dr. Katz actually even has a causation opinion that could offer, if these two reports are the best he can do with his opinions from Ms. Katz, that she has two particular injuries, describe the nature of the injuries and the fact that they're permanent. I don't know if he's able to attribute those injuries to this accident. This woman has a pre-existing history of injuries to her back, some longstanding complaints that are documented in the appendix that I submitted. She saw her primary care physician. She had referrals to doctors for her lower back, and unfortunately the records were somewhat old, and so the doctors had no longer maintained those referral records. There's a record as early, late as 2005 where she complains of chronic low back pain, which is keeping her awake. So she has a history before this accident, and the law says that when there is more than one injury, there needs to be a medical expert who specifically states that the injury at issue in the case is the injury or is the incident that caused the injuries. And so I think that there was not manifest injustice, and I do not think that there was abuse of discretion for Judge Tolliver denying that.
Did you take Dr. Katz's deposition?
I did not. I felt that I relied on this court's decision in Russell that I was entitled to rely upon the reports and letters of the expert as the totality of his opinion.
Does that become sort of, I recognize you just stated earlier that you don't often do automobile personal injury work, but to your knowledge, has it become the custom to avoid the cost of taking experts' depositions?
It wasn't a matter of avoiding the cost. I was comfortable with what was in the report as presenting a issue of causation, and it was plaintiff's burden of proof to establish it, and I made a decision not to take the expert's deposition because I was comfortable relying upon the reports as the totality of plaintiff's opinion.
Okay.
You know, okay. So, I think this is a very simple matter on appeal. The plaintiffs feel that they put the defense on notice of a causation defense. However, notice is not the standard. The standard in this jurisdiction, as this court has opined in the Bell case, is that causation must be presented by the direct testimony of a medical expert. And in this case, there was no direct testimony on the issue of causation, and as such, plaintiffs have failed to establish a prima facie case of negligence, and so dismissal of their claim was appropriate. The two expert reports that were submitted in this case do not address the issue of causation in any way, and I think that the Superior Court's decision acknowledging that was appropriate. The sole basis of the appeal today is that plaintiffs claim that these two reports reference an automobile accident. But a reference of an automobile accident is not enough. First of all, it's not an opinion on causation. And second of all, on these particular reports, the two references to the October 10th, 2007 automobile accident are in the context of plaintiff's subjective complaints to her physician. They're not the doctor's opinions about what happened to her. They're her telling the doctor what she thinks happened to her. And Ms. Roach is not an expert in this case, nor is she qualified to offer expert testimony about the cause of her injuries.
When you went to the mediation, was there any discussion of what Dr. Katz's view was of the cause of her injuries?
Not to my recollection, Your Honor.
So the whole idea that your expert acknowledged that she had a neck injury as a result of the accident, correct?
Correct.
But your expert felt that the back injuries were not related to the accident.
Correct.
And?
Excuse me, Your Honor, I misspoke. I believe he said he was unable to decipher one way or the other whether they were related or not.
Okay, so he wasn't even prepared to give an opinion that they were unrelated.
He was unable to say with any degree of medical certainty.
Right, okay. So at no point did your client have any information about Dr. Katz's views other than those two written reports. Is that what you're talking
about? That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I mentioned earlier that the plaintiff has a significant prior medical history of back problems, and as again, this court's held in Bell that when there are significant prior medical history, that there needs to be an expert opinion divining which injury is attributed to the accident in question. And again, with respect to the decision not to depose Dr. Katz, that was not That is within keeping of the case law of this jurisdiction and your, this court's decision in Russell that we're entitled to rely upon the letters and reports. Dr. Katz is plaintiff's only expert in this matter, and his expert reports did not offer any direct testimony regarding causation of plaintiff's injuries. Plaintiff's failed to establish causation and has failed to establish a prima facie case of negligence.
Do you have anything new to offer us? Basically repeating what you've already told us.
I realize that what I'm saying, and I apologize. I think some of the case law that the plaintiffs relied upon is inapplicable. The Barrow case and also the Madden case are specifically related to medical malpractice cases, which are both the one's addressing a medical negligence claim and the other is a medical negligence with an informed consent issue. Those are both statutorily defined negligence cases where I think a magic words issue would be more appropriate because of the way the statute defines negligence. Whereas here in a personal injury case, we're dealing with a common law negligence. It's not statutorily defined, and we're not looking for any magic words to state a causation claim. Dr. Katz didn't need to use any special buzzwords other than to say something very simple as the accident on October 10th caused Ms. Roche's injuries. There's no magic buzzwords. I don't think that those are particularly applicable to this case.
All right. I'm still having a little bit of trouble with this. You've just finished explaining that plaintiff would have gotten out of the problem that she wound up in simply by having Dr. Katz submit a one-line affidavit that said, consistent with the reports that I've given you and the medical records, it's my opinion that the accident caused her back injuries.
I may have oversimplified what I think would have constituted as enough of an opinion, but I think the point of what I was making there is that you didn't need to have a special buzzword causally related or something as specific as the informed consent doctrine where they have specific buzzwords in the statute that...
Well, you could have said the symptoms for which I'm treating her result from the accident.
Correct.
You wouldn't have had to use the word causation.
Exactly. But what I'm...
And again, if that would have been enough to get past your motion for summary judgment, then how is it that that statement would result in any need for you to do anything, assuming you were already prepared for trial?
The problem is that, Your Honor, I don't know what the report was going to say. If it was as simple as that statement, it may not have required anything different. However, as I said, Dr. Katz was the treating physician. He has knowledge that's helped, may not have been contained within the medical records. And without seeing a proffer of an opinion or of a report at any point prior to the oral argument a week before trial, I wasn't prepared to risk exposure to information that I wasn't made aware of. I think if the opinion had been as simple as what you had just stated, it probably would not have created a problem. But there was no proffer of any proposed testimony at any point. Even during that oral argument, when leave was asked, there was no proffer for what the opinion would have been. And so that is where I think there was that manifest injustice, and Judge Tolliver executed reason and consciousness in deciding that it was inappropriate for that continuance.
Did you see or can you confirm that on January 15, 2010, Mr. Fornius wrote Dr. Katz to request a written record asking, quote, whether these records affect your causation opinion, close quote. And then Dr. Katz responded to that precise question as follows on February 8, 2010, quote, after review of the records, I have not changed my opinion with respect to the patient's lower back and leg issues, close quote.
Your Honor, if I may, I seem almost out of time, Mr. K, if I continue.
Yeah, okay. It'd be helpful.
I did see that, and I thought it was particularly poignant that even though the plaintiff asked a direct causation question to his expert, but Dr. Katz, who is a routine expert in many workers' comp, car accident, and even occasionally med mal cases, he knows he's not a new player to the game, so to speak. He did not answer that letter with a direct causation opinion. And so I think it begs the question of whether he had a causation opinion at all.
Would you agree there are two ways to interpret it? One would be, it's so obvious, why are you sending me this question, you idiot? so obvious from my first report, or in the alternative, the way you wish to interpret it, would be, I can't because I don't have any opinion about causation. I have to stand on what I said in the first place.
I appreciate that there's always two ways to see an issue. There is an ambiguity. There is no direct statement of causation, which is what this court requires. And plaintiff could have clarified that with an expert disclosure or answers to expert discovery other than referring me to the expert reports previously submitted, or when the issue became well known to the plaintiff, they could have submitted a clarification statement, an affidavit by Dr. Katz. None of that was done. And now, you know, at the 11th hour, there was a request for that and still no proffer of what the opinion would be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I would agree that there would be two ways Dr. Katz would look at that statement, but I would submit that, as Ms. Monzo has agreed, he is a player, so to speak, or not unfamiliar to personal injury work. If the answer was, I don't have an opinion, that would have been a phone call to me and not a written report. Dr. Katz, I think it was very clear to him that he gave an opinion because he references my opinion. Just a couple of points, if I may. Ms. Monzo raised a couple of cases. The first was Bell. The second was Russell. Neither case, I believe. Plaintiff doesn't contend that. I don't think we disagree about what the law is. Plaintiff obviously has to prove a prima facie case. Part of that is causation. I think the issue in Russell was the plaintiff's attorney identified that Dr. Ufberg will testify for the plaintiff. That was it. In the Bell case, there was no expert ever identified, and when asked at a hearing, plaintiff's attorney said, I'm not sure what he'll testify to. I don't think either of those cases come close to what we have here.
Well, is it your view that whenever there is a summary judgment decision that is adverse to a party because the judge doesn't think the affidavit gets the job done, the party that lost says, Your Honor, let me have a couple more days, I'll give you another affidavit, and we might be able to persuade you otherwise. Is there no finality here?
I understand the point. I don't think it would be appropriate in every case where summary judgment was granted to give the losing party another couple of days. I think what separates this case is the first time is that this is a case where I supplied my expert report shortly after filing the complaint. And defendants had it for about a year and a half. The first mention of it was at the mediation. That we agree on. I don't think either of us is certain when the date was, but I looked at the docket, and my interim status report was sent, or was e-filed on June 3rd. And my practice is not to e-file the interim status report until after the mediation. There would have been no reason I would have waited another couple of weeks to file that interim status report. In my opinion, it would have been filed within a week of the mediation. The motion was heard.
Well, wait a second. Opposing counsel said that there was no discussion about Dr. Katz's opinion at the mediation.
That at the mediation, we didn't discuss it, but through the mediator, that's when it was brought to my attention for the first time that the defendant believed there was a problem with the expert report. There was discussion early on in the case, and which is why I wrote to Dr. Katz and asked him to provide an addendum. The discussion at that time was this accident happened in October. Right around Christmas, there was an increase in symptoms. And there was some talk about was my client involved in a work accident around that time. So they were the records that Dr. Katz reviewed. The issue about causation did not come up, and certainly did not lead to me seeking the addendum opinion from Dr. Katz. So it first came to my attention at the mediation, which I believe was less than a month before the motion was heard. The motion was filed on June 13th.
What was your reaction to his February 8, 2010, after review of the records, I have not changed my opinion with respect to the patient's lower back and leg issues, close quote. What was your thought about the sufficiency of your direct request about an effect on a causation opinion?
Being that the issue was, did this period of time in December 2007, did it change your opinion because we noticed that her symptoms got worse right around Christmas. I think it was December 26th. That I was safe, to be honest. That's how I felt. That he doesn't have a problem with her subjective complaints increasing at a certain point in time. And though I didn't ask the Superior Court for it, there is always the possibility of rescheduling the trial just so as to prevent manifest injustice. I didn't think it was necessary in this case, and I think what I did ask for was a two-sentence report. I asked Judge Tolliver if he would give me a two-sentence report to say simply, the accident caused these injuries. Here's the treatment I did. The surgery was related. I don't think it would have necessitated, and I think Ms. Monzo concedes that it may not have necessitated any additional work from Dr. Guerra, and that it may not have affected the trial. I think I submit that the more appropriate way could have been to allow me to see if I could secure a report, and if I could, then deal with the issue of whether or not Dr. Guerra needed the opportunity to comment on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.
Please rise.